I had what is a compartmental syndrome, like an internal bleeding in leg. The physician didn't realize that, and then they were trying to hide what was happening, and they wanted to amputate my leg. So they were worried to get sued.
Welcome to Boston Blockchain. I'm Kyle Hedman of China Shop Productions, and today's guest is Dr. Gianluca De Novi, founder and CEO of Circular Protocol. Our conversation starts off with Gianluca explaining how he ended up in Boston, and he shares the experiences that motivated him to create Circular Protocol. He explains the innovative aspects of Circular, including the decentralized nature and proof of reputation consensus mechanism. Be sure to check out the show notes if you want to learn more about Gianluca or Circular, but now I think it's time we meet our guest. So how do I say your name properly?
Gianluca.
Did I do it right? De Novi?
De Novi. Yeah, De Novi. Almost Gianluca. Like an Italian.
Gianluca, tell me a little bit about yourself. How did you find your way to Boston from Italy?
Oh, that's kind of a funny story.
Oh, good.
I was during my PhD. During my PhD, I won like a little award. And there was a professor of the Stanford University that invited me to join his team to work on computer haptics.
Did you say haptics? You mean like the feedback?
Haptics is, yes, is pretty much... it's not tactile, it's kinesthetic feedback. So when you have the possibility to touch and feel the weight or the resistance of objects in the virtual world through a real world interface. Mm-hmm. So then through some struggle I had with what was my advisor at that time, I ended up without even asking to Boston. Invited by a friend of the initial professor to the Harvard School of Engineering and Applied Sciences. I was at the time at the Biorobotics Lab.
That's how you found your way into there?
That's how I found my way into Boston. And I came here for a 6-month internship. 9 months, no, 1 year later, I was a postdoc, and 9 months later, I was a faculty at Harvard. And wow. 2 more years later, I was director of the lab where I did my postdoc, yeah.
Wow, that's impressive. Tell me a little bit more about the Biorobotics Lab, because that sounds fascinating. Is that how you got into most of this stuff?
So my PhD is in robotics, and in particular, I studied robotics for 2 main applications. Was the... surgery, applied to surgery, and the other was the haptics, so which to do the surgery with a surgical robot, with the modern surgical robot you have on the surgeon side, another robot that is like a handle, but is an active handle so that when you touch the tissue in the abdomen of a patient, you can feel those contact forces on your handles. So when you intersect your tools or you touch any tissue, your pull, you can feel all these forces amplified, obviously. And that's where my expertise has been. In general, I consider myself more an expert in high-performance computing. Indeed, haptics means a lot of coding related to simulating physics, to
right.
You know, calculate stuff that require a lot of speed and processing power. That's how I got into GPUs and virtual reality, those kind of things, all connected. And indeed, I ended up at Harvard Medical School, and then I became director of the Medical Device and Simulation Lab at Mass General Brigham.
That's an impressive resume.
Thank you.
Let's talk about how that led into Circular Protocol then, because looking at that, it looks like one of the main missions is to try to improve like the way patient record keeping is done. Is that?
Yeah, that's correct. So, well, I work in the medical industry because of a very traumatic experience I had when one time when I was looking for my thesis, for my master's degree thesis, I was invited by a professor to look at one of these possible topics, and I ended up in an operating room where there was like a little girl on a surgical table. Then I decided there were better things I could do with my life and try to go in the healthcare industry was one of those. And also been victim of a case of malpractice when I was a teenager.
Can you talk about that?
I had a small fracture that almost ended up in an amputation because...
infection or...
I had what is a compartmental syndrome, like an internal bleeding in leg. The physician didn't realize that, and then they were trying to hide what was happening, and they wanted to amputate my leg. So they were worried to get sued.
Was this in the U.S. or is
no? That was in Italy, mm-hmm. in the south of Italy. So that exposed me to some of these things. And during the period of COVID, I was also exposed a little bit through my collaboration with some research with the Department of Defense, and a bit because of my exposure through the Mass General, to a little bit of the craziness that was happening in that period of time. And then at that point, I went to work from home, and I've been just thinking about how can I prevent some of this weird stuff that is happening in the healthcare industry, you know, where people don't have ownership of their data or what their, that's literally their future.
Yeah.
Like I know a family, they had like a 9-year-old girl that went for a routine procedure and came out on a wheelchair, and nobody would even sue the hospital because the data looked like they had no liability.
But so who's in control of that data?
Yeah, so you have really, as a patient, no right, because the hospital owns the data, owns the logs on who accessed the data. But if they decide to manipulate the data so that they can embellish the data and make it look like there's no liability from their end, who can protect you? If a pharmaceutical company does clinical trials and they manipulate the data, even if there are CROs, company that, you know, manage those protocols, and speaking with them, you find out that sometime the data magically changes over time. So how can you, as a patient, protect yourself from these? And from the other end, if you are a genuine researcher and you are studying something, how can you protect yourself from people that maybe will blame you for other things? So then you realize that there is the need for a technology that helps you doing that. And then I, at that time, I just realized that, you know, the blockchain was interesting. But what was more interesting for me was that no one of the existing blockchains were suitable for meeting regulatory compliance.
How is
because so for FDA, for HIPAA, for GDPR, you need to have, for example, data that is anonymous or that is stored in the hospital and outside. But if it's in the hospital, it's centralized or subject to be changed. But you can use an outside ledger, so you can create a signature of the data all the time you change the data, and you store in the decentralized ledger that signature. So if you change the data here in the blockchain, you have a signature, and that signature doesn't match anymore. So this is what is called the zero-knowledge proof.
Yeah, okay.
So at that point, you realize that there is a something interesting. But if you want to use this for healthcare institutions and in an effective way, even the signature has to be somehow protected, because you can still look at the timestamp, but the timestamp can still be a sensitive information in some cases. So the blockchains that are out there, if they are private, they are not decentralized. And if they are private and they are decentralized, still they have no control on where the network is, because the regulator can even say, well, this kind of data, I want not to go outside of the United States.
Right, right.
So if it's a decentralized network, it has to be a decentralized network in US or in Massachusetts. So no one of the existing blockchains was addressing this. So I just realized that I was the perfect man in the perfect place in the perfect time. And I said, there is a gap on the market, and I know how to build something like this. I'm an expert in how to make things go fast. And I said, I can build this stuff and create something that can be compliant by design and be suitable for these kind of applications. So to become de facto, you know, the blockchain for the healthcare applications.
Right.
And then obviously the challenge is not only building the blockchain, but is also building all the tools that enable the healthcare provider or all the developers that develop for healthcare providers to develop the best kind of applications.
You got to encourage them to use the network once you created it, right?
That's correct. And to be effective has to be truly decentralized, cannot be fake decentralized. If it is not decentralized, is not.
So how do you get around that? Like, From what I see, it looks like Circular can create like nodes within nodes almost.
No, so the story is different. So when you go to existing blockchains and you say, I want a private chain, what they do is they clone, they take their software, they take some machines inside the data center and they run their blockchain in a private network, which okay. is centralized. So if it's centralized, why don't you use a cloud or don't you use a database? Right. At that point, it's the same. Instead, what we do at Circular is different. Each node in our network can process more than one blockchain. So that means that if I create a decentralized network, when I want to create a private network, all I need to do is add one more chain within the same network. So if I have a certain level of decentralization, when you come and you ask for your private chain, I don't have to provision a private network. I can use the public network, and you inherit the decentralization of my network. And all of this is accomplished simply separating the process from the data, no?
Okay.
So the blockchain node, it's a piece of software that processes information. It doesn't really care if it's the blockchain A, B, or C. I can right. have multiple instances of blockchains that they can live simultaneously. And the node, which are hardware pieces, instead can, you know, after you have nodes, you can run all the blockchains you want if you want. So that is one of the main differentiation between Circular and the other. So the regulatory compliance, which is also accomplished through the fact that it's a multi-chain and interoperable environment.
I'm not sure I'm completely following yet, though, on how you keep the data segregated to its location then. Yeah. So if other networks can like help compute to validate the transactions, are they not accessing that data, or are they just, how does that work?
Well, again, it's not the data, it's the signature of the data that you access.
Okay.
Not only, but the way things are done, it's also everything encrypted. So even the signature itself, you don't even see, not even the signature. But there is one more thing, you know. When you have a network, and this network can be on multiple continents, so let's say around the world, you can create within that network subnets, which yes. are virtual subnets. Which means the network is only one, it is the internet, but you can segment within that network subsets that live only in one country, in one region, and you can say, okay, I want a new blockchain, but this blockchain can live only on computers that are certified to be present in that geographical area. Right. So between our nodes, some nodes are... You don't know where they are. I mean, you can see from the IP where they are, but they could use VPNs. They could do... So they, let's say they are the not certified nodes. And then there are the certified nodes, which are trusted parties. So people that did a KYC. So you know where their node is. You know the address where the machine is physically. And you know that they are distributed. So you know, and then you can guarantee through this classification of the nodes where they are. So you can say, okay, in that country, in that region, we have 20 machines. So you can go on those 20 nodes. Right now, we are also a small company, so a small project. So we are not running big numbers. Right now, we are only in two continents.
Yet. Right?
Yeah. We were four people in May. We're 20 in May 2023. They're 27 right now.
Oh, wow. So it is growing then for sure. The other question I had then about the way your protocol works is it looks like it's collaborative as opposed to like proof of stake, proof of work. Can you kind of explain some of the difference of that and why you decided to go that route?
Yeah, so we also filed a patent on the algorithm, which is called proof of reputation. And it's pretty much mirroring what happened in real life, where people can earn based on reputation. So if I know I'm a node operator, I'm obviously interested in earning something, you know,
right.
to be paid for my service. But the proof of reputation is aiming to much more, and it is to take what is best from different consensus algorithms. So proof of work, which is the most known one, which is the one used by Bitcoin, is interesting. Why? Is this interesting? Because when you mine a block, when you mint a block, there is a certain work that the machine needs to put to calculate an hash with a certain complexity. So that if you want to, let's say, tamper that block, you need to do that amount of work. So let's say that the amount of work is, 10 seconds of computation. That means that if you have, a million blocks, now you start, adding up all these seconds of computation, start becoming a meaningful amount of work, right? The only problem of the proof of work done on Bitcoin, unfortunately, is that it's a competitive work. So which means that if there are 10,000 nodes, it means that all 10,000 nodes are calculating their own hash, their own version of that block, but only one will be selected. So it's good because, adding that work increases security, but it's bad that from the other end, I'm consuming a lot of electric power because I'm just doing, work that I'm going to throw away. The proof of stake instead is interesting because it's introducing the stake that can be slashed as a deterrent to make you take care of your node so that the node is always up to date, is not malicious. It's not really to prevent you to steal, because if you have to put $100,000 on a stake, but you steal $10 million with a transaction, it's not going to make a very big difference. But it's going to be interesting because it's going to be an incentive to keep the node in good standing, right? But there is one other problem there. The problem, what is? The problem is that, if you need a stake and the stake is thousands and thousands of dollars, not everybody can afford to stake that amount of value. So that's creating a financial centralization now. So only for who can. But I want anyone to be able to participate to that consensus. I want every student, it doesn't matter who you are. You need to be able to do that. So I am on the proof of reputation. You are punished not on what you're staking, but on your future earnings. And that's where the reputation part comes into play. So the fact that you have a reputation index, which is a number that goes between 0 and 1. When you are at the peak of your reputation, your reputation is 1. When you are 0, you are banned out of the network. But when you are now, what you do with this reputation index is multiplying this number for the transaction fee.
Okay.
And the block reward. So if it's 0.5, you're going to earn half of what you're going to earn. But now you understand you didn't have to put anything there. You're just going to make less. It's going to be less profitable. And that value that is taken away from you goes back to the protocol that can reinvest in research and development, to make the network better and better. Obviously, everybody is aiming for you to work and keep the node in good standing. But there is also another thing that is tied up inside the network. The consensus is the fact of the multi-chain. Again, say this multi-chain has a lot of impact. Even if you take the proof of stake where there's not that crazy computation, it's still a sequential blockchain, it's a sequential data structure. So that means that if you have, again, the 10,000 nodes, only one node will mint a block. And all the other 9,999 will be waiting for that node to mint the block, burning electricity, doing no work, doing nothing now. They don't burn a lot in calculating the hash for the Bitcoin, but they're still on.
Right.
But if you instead have a multi-chain paradigm, when the nodes are waiting on the block minted on one chain, they can keep minting blocks on the other chains. Okay. So you make everything even more effective. So that is pretty much how I could combine some of the features of the proof of work and the proof of stake to make something that was more fair and more environmentally friendly. I would say more environmentally honest, more than friendly.
It's definitely more efficient, technology. I think you can say. That's been one of our biggest complaints about Bitcoin and some of the other cryptos out there that use the proof of
work
is that you're just wasting so much electricity, so much resources.
From the other end, I say that the cost benefit is heavily shifted toward the benefit, in my opinion. So even if you are wasting a lot of energy, what is Bitcoin bringing to people is it's worth much more than that electricity. But that doesn't take away the fact that if there is a way to optimize something, you shouldn't.
Yes. So that's where innovation comes in, is they come in, they optimize things that are existing to make them better.
Yeah.
I was told you're also an expert on AI. If I was to cue you up on that, I can just let you talk for half an hour. So I have a question about AI and blockchain then. Like, how do the two like complement each other? How the two technologies work together?
Sure. So if you think about AI, AI is already changing, revolutionizing the world. Like, a lot of things that before were so tedious to do, now with AI, with ChatGPT and other things, they are so easy. But now there is a problem. We need to protect people from AI and AI from people. Because now if I have like an employee, that this employee is taking decisions using a piece of AI, and there is a bad decision that has been taken, what is the employee going to say? It's not my fault. No. The AI suggested me to do that. So we don't want the AI to become a place where to dump all the liability, the bad liability, and leave to people just the merits, right?
Right.
Because that would be not right, because it would, jeopardize the future of AI. And, you know, the AI needs also, from the other end, need to grow, but need to be taken care of in the right way. And from the other way, you need to take care that people, you know, are also protected when they have a merit, or when they take, like, you know, those decisions that the AI can't. So everybody's today is looking at certifying the output of the AI. So there is a question, there is an answer that comes from the AI, and I want to make sure that comes from the AI. So I use a signature and I put it in the blockchain. So now I have a proof that that sentence and that decision and that result came out of the AI. Take ChatGPT, for example. If instead is not on chain, must be the employee. Mm-hmm. Right? Right. I know, let's say things this way. But now there is another thing. If I am the one who owns the AI company, I can make the AI do whatever I want. And the only thing I need to do is to control the training set. If I use the control the training data, I can make my AI be a Republican or a Democrat, a racist or a sexist. I can make my AI privilege, you know, someone. So how can I certify that it's not only the output coming from the AI, but is how it's generated that is controlled? So Circular is the first blockchain that does not only data certification through the zero knowledge proof like everybody else, but is the only blockchain that does process certification through what we called hyper contracts. And hyper contracts are a very interesting architecture. I'm sure other people, other companies will come up with their own version of this, but we wanted to be the first. And the idea is that, how do you take a decision, with or without AI, is very important, and in some cases more important than the final decision itself. Because imagine, I don't know, and the management of a company or the administration of a town, they have to decide how much you pay for certain type of building, certain type of lots of whatever. Well, how do they calculate these numbers? They have a certain amount of data. They study this data. They take statistics based on this data. There is an algorithm that they put together, and they come up with certain numbers at the end, and they are the numbers that they are the result. But then, 3 years later, there is a new administration comes in and say, oh, you made up the numbers to favor your uncle, your cousin, and your best friend. So how can you prevent situations like this? You can do certifying the entire process. So the data you now to do, now you need to certify the decision-making algorithm.
So is this sort of like the way a company like Alcoa, when they're making aluminum metal for the airline industry, like every step of the process is being certified? Like there's record keepings of like how the metal was melted, what the impurities were, what the chemistry
results
were.
Well, that is how every step is made, but there's no decision-making in that. Instead, is when I have data-driven decision-making, that's where it comes in, you know, to play the process certification. That algorithm that you apply to the result of the computation is very important. Mm-hmm. But the current, what we have right now to do that is the smart contract. But the simple smart contract doesn't do processing on data. They just manipulate a few transactions and that's it. So we created a smart contract that is like a two-stage rocket. There is a first stage that is deployed in a blockchain, in the network, and the second stage is then deployed in GPU super pods that do data processing. So the network create working sessions on random GPU around the world. They don't use always the same. And then these GPU are connected through a secure bridge to a private database or a private cloud. They can take the data, process the data, and then they deposit a final result. So you do this with multiple instances, let's say minimum three, okay? Mm-hmm. When you have three times the same result or three different results, you send these results through a consensus that is implemented in the first stage. So let's say the first stage of the smart contract acts like an interface with this system, and the second stage tells how the processing needs to do. But everything ends up in chain. So now you know where the data comes from. There's a signature of the data. There's a public algorithm, and there is a public consensus. It's everything formalized. Right. So you know where the original data came from, how it was modified, and what was the final decision that was made based on that data. So no one can come later and say, you made the decision because you made up the numbers.
I am impressed because I can see applications for that across many different fields, more than just things like healthcare or process controls. Like process controls and having a way to be able to reliably pull up that information and say, no, the data is good. Like this network has already verified it all for us. Like that's huge.
I know. That's why I put a lot of effort in this. And right now we have a couple of top tier companies that are interested in this technology. We are like a tiny, tiny startup with the gigantic companies that are now talking to us about how to integrate this in their offering and asking us, how can we make sure that you're going to be around if we start working? And I say, it's very simple. Just invest in us.
Yeah. In your LinkedIn profile, you describe yourself as a serial entrepreneur. Like, what are some of the other companies you've tried to start?
Oh, well, so Circular is my 14th.
Oh, my.
But a lot of failures, no worry. So,
but those are all opportunities to learn and improve, right?
Well, that's absolutely correct. And that's how I learn.
What's the saying? The difference between a success and a failure is the person who succeeds got up one more time than you did.
Probably. Anyway, I had a couple of good results in the past and a couple of...
What were some of the big lessons you learned then, or things that you took towards this project that you're in now?
Oh, the biggest lesson I learned is that in life it's very important to diversify. And at the same time, that in business is very important to focus. Mm-hmm. So they seem to be very, very different, right?
Right.
So I can tell you two little stories. One story is that my second company was a pretty successful company. I had employees. I was very young. I was making a lot for my age. I was still a student, and I was driving expensive cars and having a hell of a life. And I thought that I was on top of the world. You know, I said, wow, who can touch me? That was 2008, everything ended, when the crisis that started in US 2008 arrived in Italy only 1 year later. And I lost one by one all the main clients that I had. And that's why I came in US, because at that point I said, well, at least I have still one foot in my academic track. Maybe I will go ahead. That was a very good lesson, because I learned, you know, you never should think that you made it, because it's behind the corner. And it happened again. I started a surgical robotics company, raised funds, built a first prototype, open office in Cambridge, everything, you know, mm-hmm. All bells and whistles to make a very great thing. And COVID came and boom, everything disappeared. A catastrophe. So it doesn't matter. Good ideas and that don't always pay off. So you need to keep a couple of options always available in terms of a way to supplement or complement risks. And that is a very important thing. From the other end, though, when you want to build a project, you need to be laser focused. That have to be the first thing and the last thing in every day. Otherwise, you're not going anywhere. If you're chasing the unreachable, you're never going to reach it. I've seen, you know, cadavers of a lot of companies dying trying to make it to the perfect product, to the perfect thing that never came, and they ran out of juice and they never made it.
Don't let perfect be the enemy of good.
Yeah, so my style and my approach in Circular and in some of the other companies is always MVP is the key word. Get out as soon as you can. Then you improve, then you embellish, then you can do all the beautiful things you want. You need to stay humble and be concrete. So that is a very important lesson learned as well.
I think a lot of people could stand to use the humble lesson in today's
day. I'll tell you this, for Circular, I personally invested a lot of money into it, personally. And then I built everything before going out and raising funds. I didn't go look for one penny until everything was already there, working, running.
Any advice you'd give to somebody who is looking to start their business or maybe is currently struggling with a good idea but having trouble implementing it?
Well, keep going. I think I am a living example of the fact that, you know, the...
Just get back up one more time.
Yeah, that's exactly correct. But it's also very important to seek advice, to seek individuals that they are willing because they want to, not because you ask them, to support you. Find the right energy around you. Surround yourself with people that want to see you succeeding and want to see you on track. And listen, we evolve as a species because we build on the shoulders of the previous generations, right? So let's keep doing that. Let's pass along.
Man, that's such a good message to end this on. I don't think I can ask you anything else now. last thing I'd ask, though, is with Circular Protocol, where can people go if they'd like to learn more or if they have some ideas that maybe they want to suggest to you?
So Circular Protocol is a community project, meaning that anyone is a contributor. It doesn't matter if you code, if you don't code, if you do marketing, whatever you want to do, there is always something to do for you. There are opportunities to get paid. There are opportunities to volunteers. You can go on our website. You can go in our social media, ask around, and you'll get the answers you're looking for.
And that website is circularlabs.io.
That's correct.
Dr. Gianluca. I like to give that title when people have earned it, and you've definitely earned your title. Thank you so much for the time today coming in. I know it's a busy, hectic week with the event going on, but looking forward to seeing you speak this week, and hope our paths cross again in the future.
I'll be happy to. Thank you.
The cover art for this podcast was custom designed for us by the amazing people at Epic Made. Epic Made is a digital art and animation studio that actually understands the magic behind powerful creative assets for gaming, entertainment, and tech. So visit epicmade.com to get expert creative help for campaigns, commercials, socials, and more. That's epic-made.com. DSpark is the leading user research platform for Web3. Companies can easily get feedback from any type of user, helping them build better products and improve their marketing. If you're interested in giving feedback, get paid USDC to share your opinions and improve Web3. Visit DSpark.io today. That's DESPARK.io. Bola allows you to create, tokenize, and finance invoices and manage all of your on-chain accounts. With TCS Blockchain, they recently went live with their groundbreaking solution that uses blockchain to settle freight invoices 90% cheaper and faster than traditional means. Thank you for helping make this show possible, Bola. Go to bolanetwork.com and tcsblockchain.com to learn more and join the waitlist. Numbers Protocol harnesses blockchain technology to enhance authenticity and traceability of digital content globally, with operational bases in London, LA, Dubai, and Taiwan. Recognized as the best in Web3 at the 2023 SXSW Awards and supported by Google and NVIDIA, Numbers Protocol offers the Capture, an all-in-one suite for content verification, copyright protection, and monetization. This technology has proven pivotal in projects like the archival of the 2020 U.S. presidential election and supports artists and businesses in ensuring the integrity and security of digital media. Jotto is a cutting-edge platform that amplifies the customer voice by making it simple for organizations to gather feedback through video, audio, and text. Using powerful AI, Giotto analyzes this feedback in real time to deliver actionable insights that help organizations understand their audience better. Whether it's governments, businesses, or events, Giotto enables a deeper connection by ensuring every voice is heard and valued. It's an essential tool for anyone looking to turn raw feedback into strategic actions and drive meaningful engagement. So once again, thank you to our sponsors for helping make the show possible, and thank you everybody for listening. Views and opinions expressed on this program are their own and do not necessarily reflect the official policies or positions of any affiliated entities. The information shared in this podcast is for general informational purposes only and should not be construed as financial, legal, or professional advice. Always conduct your own research and consult with a qualified professional before making any decisions based on the content of this podcast. We appreciate your understanding and hope you enjoy the insights and expertise shared in today's episode.